Well, I've got three short, interrelated, but not quite logically connected reflections for you today from our first reading and just dipping in to the other two readings as well. As I was reading Isaiah's prophecy earlier this week, an image sprung to my mind's eye. You see, the larger realities of creation that Isaiah so vividly paints were narrowed in my imagination, on this gathering, this smaller gathering. And I saw them reflected in the space and in the face of St. Matthew congregational members. I saw that same dynamic, the call and response of the text. You see, there's promises, incredible promises offered. And on the other side, the appropriate exhortation to live into the promises. And then further, the new things that result from that synergy that are reflected in our lives together. And I think sometimes that is surely true, sometimes very powerfully true, and of course other times less so. So, if you will, this is the highway down the center here, towards our Jerusalem, towards this table. And on either side is the budding, the flowering desert, new growth in the wildernesses we experience as people, as individuals, as a community. And I think as well we can go farther and say in our wider community. Sometimes we feel like we are the wilderness. It's not just something that's happening out there or maybe as a part of us, but we wonder about our lives as a whole. Is anything good going to grow? I was aware again of what is surely true of the scriptures as a whole. Its most powerful, poetic, and transformational promises are offered to people who in number and in terms of cultural impact wonder if they matter. Indeed, who are possibly in desperate need, who feel small, sometimes even hopelessly so. Its most powerful exhortations and commands are given to people who you might wonder if you were to look at them, and maybe we look at ourselves, and we ask this question, can they really do that? God seems to choose this type of approach precisely because of the seeming insignificance of the situation or the darkness of the moment in the national or personal history. The good news, of course, is offered to all, to the poor, the wealthy, to every tribe and nation, as our Book of Common Prayer puts it, to all sorts and conditions of men/humans, we would say. It's most readily received, however, by those who are experiencing some sort of physical, emotional, economic, or spiritual crisis. Some longing for meaning in the face of irrelevance, or feeling irrelevant. If, as we've experienced here in this congregation, people arrive at this place to add a bit of spirituality to their already full lives, they rarely, if ever, last. This place, this priest, this community, isn't consumer-oriented enough to satisfy those sorts of short-term desires. We're not trying to scratch each other's minorly irritating itches. We understand that we're on a journey to discover the depth of God's beauty, truth, and goodness in the face of Jesus Christ, and just so in each other. And we're trying to journey in such a way that we are genuinely hospitable to all explorations that are authentic, all genuine questions, and many different perspectives. This is not a journey that will be, because of that, simplistic. And that turns some people off. But the flip side, we're all needed. Because it isn't simplistic, each perspective, each insight that we bring to this room. And so it just might be a journey that we can all take together towards our Jerusalem. So that's reflection one. Number two, Isaiah promises that the wilderness and the dry land shall be glad, and the desert rejoice and blossom. Crocuses. This is the one particular flower Isaiah notes. They often bloom in the fall, sometimes even in the winter period, or at least there are species, especially in the Middle East, that bloom thusly. In other words, when the wilderness is driest, I've lived in the Middle East for 3 years, and by the time October rolls around, it's bone dry. At the end of the summer, and before the fall rains, or just as the fall rains begin, they bloom. There's an example on your bulletin cover. Just when it would seem that the soul is a dry bone wilderness, when it seems there's just no water whatsoever, there's a flash of brilliant color. That relational difficulty is starting to give way to a new mutuality. As difficult conversations lead to a new appreciation, that monetary lack is leading to a significant downsizing, but fresh realization that now that you have less, you're spending less time looking after all your stuff. That illness gives you a new impetus to get in shape, to take care of yourself. One of my wilderness growth spurts has come in the last 5 years as I've had to learn how to shape my heart and soul in the midst of conflict. As I've persisted and resisted the urge to run, I've noticed that I'm less threatened by conflict. I'm able to be less anxious and more prayerful. Now, of course, I still feel that, you know, the basic fight/flight impulse, but I'm getting better at seeing where God might be creatively working with what is always there, which is our limited perspectives and the overwhelming importance that we often feel to be right. And I see it more in myself, and so I'm more and more committed to sticking with it, to not giving up in the face of conflict. Now, that personal example and some of the other examples I offered are not just silver linings. That's new growth. That's new possibilities in wilderness times. The gospel is nothing but the promise that God will keep promising to invite us into the only promises strong enough to turn our longings and sadness into joy. That's the gospel. Now, we might try to paper over our own wilderness by whatever means at our disposal, and there's many in our culture, and so I won't enumerate them. But here's the thing. The wilderness is what is. It is there on purpose. It is a sign of God's desire for us, actually. It is why, in my humble musings, I would suggest that God put Israel in a wilderness, yet a wilderness that was at the heart of the ancient world, at the crossroads of all of the superpowers, who lived in fertile valleys. It was a place uniquely situated to remind Israel of her condition. Dependent on God's provision, year by year, and yet within sight of all the distractions that would become temptations. A double bind, if you will. A test of loyalty to God's new way. A test, of course, she failed time and time again. A test the church has failed time and time again. And yet God never gives up. An awareness of the wilderness in us and around us is tied to the realization that we too, of course, are Israel. We're placed in a wilderness so that we too will be aware of our need of God and those things around us that can pull us away from the deeper resources that only God can give to us. And so, Isaiah says, strengthen the weak hands, make firm the feeble knees. Say to those who are of a fearful heart, be strong, do not fear. You see, recognition of our finite condition, that we are designed for a divine partner, is not weakness. It's the truth. And just so, it prepares us for our part. Awareness, quiet, dialogue, even dispute. It prepares us for prayer. Prayer that is more than running through a list, but this kind of prayer. Community. Community on a journey. God working with us. My doctor told me 2 weeks ago that x-rays show that I have osteoarthritis in my knees. Guess I'm getting older. His prescription? Strengthen your knees. Strengthen your knees. Yes, they are weaker than I would like, but that doesn't mean something can't be done. Exercise, it turns out, really is important. It's more crucial than ever. Number three. Isaiah says, here is your God. Full stop. Later, he says, he will come and save you. Well, which is it? Is it the present tense or the future? Both. That's what Advent is all about. Jesus came and is here. Jesus will come again. Already we see what God can do in our lives as we submit to God's will. Healing, transformation, new purpose, a different outlook on our work and on what is possible in our world. And yet, like Job noted in our second reading, I don't know, we didn't seem to get to Job in our second reading, we need patience. Our second reading is one of the most serious understatements of all time. Have you ever read the book of Job? It is chocked full of Job's fury, arguments and disagreements with God. 40-some chapters. Now, if that is patience, we need to seriously redefine what patience is. And indeed we do. Patience is not quietude, but engagement with God and with each other. Waiting is not doing nothing, but seeking, exploring, sorting, praying, sometimes arguing, acting, all of that and more. And so John the Baptist's question is in truth ours. Given the state of the world, is Jesus really the one, or should we look for another? And here's the answer, I think. It's an answer of faith. God has made a highway in the midst of our finitude, our smallness, a highway to this banquet table, a highway that cuts through the wilderness, indeed is made from the utter wilderness of the cross. And as we walk it together, we become aware of new life. Flowers are blooming, water is pooling, but that doesn't take away from our questions. Doesn't mean that Job was wrong to dispute with God in his patience. It doesn't mean that John was wrong to ask the questions he did. God is here. God has yet to come. And so this Sunday is traditionally known as Gaudete Sunday, as I said at the beginning, joy, rejoice Sunday. It's in the imperative. Clearly the texts chosen are meant to strengthen, if I could put it that way, subvert, maybe is another way of putting it, our normal understanding of joy. It is this stronger elixir that is offered to us at this table. We are called to walk this road by faith, believing that God is not simply a projection of our imaginations, not simply a better feeling, not like a drug of choice. Joy is living in the synergy of promise and response. But I can't. Yes, we can. But I'm not strong enough. Strengthen what is there. Against the odds, sure. But that's what we expect when we follow a crucified Messiah who shows his face after it's been in a bloody death shroud. Then our eyes, too, will be opened, our ears unstopped, and our tongues singing for joy. Amen.